Okay, it's this is Jazz. I'm here on the 20th of October 2012 at Dave's house. I'm not sure where that is.
57 Beatrice Road.
There we go. I'm here with Claire and Dave. What's your surname?
Morrison.
Could you just spell that for me, please?
Morrison.
Okay, and then just the last bit, where and when were you born?
I was born in Norbury, that's south of 16, on the 15th of March 1943.
Okay, and whereabouts did you work around here?
I worked at Scotledge at school, which has since become Southwark College.
Right, okay, and then what did you do?
I taught woodwork, metalwork, but I was also, when I first went there, I was the head of year, senior master, deputy head, and the final part, I was the head teacher.
So you did pretty much everything. How was being a metalwork, woodwork teacher? Because they don't do that anymore, do they?
No, it was good. It was good. It was interesting. Because adding a little bit on here, not only did I do that there, for a while I used to go to Brixton Prison and take a woodwork class of an evening, which was quite interesting.
I can imagine. And what was that like? Was that good?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, the people that came to it were very keen to get on. I think the officers there had a rather negative attitude, to be quite honest.
Right, so that kind of helped the community a bit as well. What sort of people did you teach at the school?
Yeah, it was a secondary school.
Right.
So really taught all years, one to six.
Was it a mixed school or?
Yeah.
Okay, were they
fairly mixed.
Local kids?
Mainly local, yes.
Right. Are there any memorable days or things that stand out for you?
Quick, trying to think of a memorable day. I can't really think of anything that I would say has stood out to me. No, I mean, obviously, one that sticks in my memory is when we were first told the school was closing. But it seemed to me more than just a coincidence that they closed our school when they're looking for somewhere else for Southwark College. Our numbers were rising, but they still said they wanted to close it.
Right. What did you do? Kind of, what was your daily routine as a first as a woodwork teacher?
Well, basically, I used to get there early. I'm one of these people that believe it's better to get there early than late. And you'd simply go in and make sure you got the stuff ready for the day.
What sort of stuff did you do in the class exactly?
Well, it depends on the year what sort of woodwork you chose to do. It was in lower years, it'd be something sort of fairly basic.
Like, I've never done woodshops.
Yeah.
So, like, what sort of stuff?
You're testing my memory now. I think perhaps early on, perhaps simply to practice using a saw and a chisel, you might make a little wooden boat,
right.
Solid, perhaps drill a hole and put a post in it,
yeah.
Mast in it, yeah.
And then what did the older kids do?
The older ones, well, obviously those in year five would have been doing their GCSEs, so they had to do things that involved making joints. Some little boxes, maybe. Some of them made coffee tables, which is quite popular. I think very, very sort of popular with mum when you took a coffee table home, provided it stood up, of course.
Yeah.
I think that's probably. And also, there's facility. There were lathes for turning bowls.
Yeah, right. So it was kind of pottery as well, wasn't it?
No, it wooden.
Oh,
yeah,
of course.
block of wood, the old chisel fed in, flying it.
Right. And then, what was it, O-levels back then, is it? Did they
no, it got changed to GCSEs by then.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, obviously, those do a GCSE, it wasn't just the practical, they had to sort of learn the theoretical side of things.
Right, and you taught that as well, yeah?
Yeah.
What did you do as a, did you say you were a deputy head as well?
Yeah.
What was your duties as a deputy head?
Obviously, you had to keep an eye on things generally. Although you had head of years, if they had a problem that they thought was more serious, they'd bring it to you. If it involved, you know, the need to suspend somebody, because as deputy head you had the authority to do that. Or indeed if there's a need to talk to the parents.
Yeah. Did you ever have to suspend someone?
I think only ever once. But,
do you remember why?
I think it was for bullying. And it's a question of suspending till the parents came up. And when you interview parents, you've got a mixture. Some were very much on the school side, and others were. I know there's one classic was a teacher had prepared some work for a child they thought was just what the child needed and sent it home, and the mum brought it straight back and said, "It's your job to teach and not mine." And you think, what chance does that child stand? You know, when the parents sit with such a negative attitude.
Did those sorts of stuff happen very often? Or?
No, thankfully it's the exception. Yeah, I mean, most parents are keen to support their children, you know, are glad for any help they're given.
What sort of system did you have to go by if you wanted to discipline someone?
Well, they had a detention system, whereby, I mean, obviously a teacher, if they want to keep anyone back after school, they can. Although there was a detention where you'd have a senior member of staff who would be in an appointed room, and children had to sort of meet there.
Did you ever have to be in a detention room?
Yeah, yeah.
What was it like?
Pretty boring, actually. Pretty boring. I mean, basically, once they were there and settled down, those that settled down quickest went home fairly quickly. You know, with a warning not to misbehave again. But as you can imagine, it tends to be the same people. It was almost like a club, really, for some of them. Meet up your friends, come to detention. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. would you say you were a kind of nice teacher when you were teaching woodwork? Did you give out many detentions or not?
No, I don't think so. I did. I mean, I tried to be a pleasant. And I think that the children tend to react to you, or the majority do, there's always the exceptions, the way you treat them. I think if you, you know, treat them fairly, which I'm afraid not all teachers do, and, you know, considerate, then the majority of them will respond in the same way. There's always one or two that don't.
Would you did you set homework in woodshop?
Not in the homework in sort of a woodwork or metalwork would only come approaching exam time, simply because, you know, they'd be given topics to prepare on, the sort of things they may well have questions in the exam now.
What was the kind of layout of the class? 'Cause I know nothing about it. Was it? They just turn up and did work, which you explained it.
Well, I mean, with the woodwork and metalwork, it was in workshops.
Right.
There's sort of the benches, there's sort of two to a bench, sort of opposite corners. if you're doing the sort of technical drawing, then if there's a drawing room, obviously there'd be drawing boards.
Did you mark those drawings before they went on?
To mark them?
Yeah, as in, do you check over them?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do a lot of on the drawing side, but I mean, any homework, obviously, if there was so much that you had to mark it. And I think it's, you know, you can mark it in a negative way or a positive way. That may sound strange, but I mean, I always would try and look for the good in a piece of work. And some people want to look for the worst bits and emphasise those, and I'll tend to praise the good and say, but so and so needs attention.
Right. Where did you mark? Did you do it at home? At school?
At school, mostly. Yeah.
It didn't take you work home.
No, I just stayed longer at school. Or did it early in the morning, you see.
What times did you work? You said?
What times?
Yeah. Did your hours change as you went up the ladder?
No. No, it stayed the same. I mean, it was 9 o'clock start, and I was usually there by 8:30. And probably, if it finished at 4, I'd be there till 5.
And what duties did you have when you were a head teacher?
Yeah, well, I didn't become head teacher until they decided, dear Southwark Council, in their wisdom, to close the school, and the then head decided he'd retire straight away. So left all the sorting out, clearing up, finding new schools for the pupils, new schools for the teachers, to me. But it went well. I was pleased. You know, I think all the children got into the schools mostly they wanted, but obviously some couldn't get in because if you our numbers were lower than they should have been, there's still a lot of children to then put into the other local schools. I think most of the staff got places all right. And I can remember the head of education at the time called me to go and see him. He said, you know, well, how are things? So I was telling him, he says, no, I mean, how are things for you? He says, what are you going to do? So I said, I haven't even thought of that yet. Anyway, what I ended up doing was going to work in education personnel, which is quite interesting to suddenly be working alongside people that you used to have to refer to. And it was while I was working there that I had a stroke. And obviously I never went back to teaching again after that, or to any sort of working. Because I know I'm sort of detracting a bit, but to see with the background, I was in 3 different hospitals for about a year. Came out of there, went to Southwark Park Nursing Home, which has closed recently. And I was still stuck in a wheelchair. While I was there, I was referred to physio to St Thomas's. I met a couple, Ken and Helen, who did a job share. Taken by ambulance 3 times a week. Very, very painful, stretching the legs and all that sort of thing, but they got me walking, bless them. I keep in touch with them. Ken wasn't very happy because I hadn't had a lot of physio in hospital before I came out. Well, I think probably I was so useless and they've got such limited time that, you know, I thought we won't bother with that one. But anyway, that sort of got me mobile. And once I could get around, I thought, well, I'd like to do something again in education. So I applied to Southwark Council to become a governor of a school. And they said, we've only got one available at the moment, that's Townsend Primary School. It's just off the old Kent Road. So I thought, well, I've got young grandchildren, why not? So for the last whatever years I've been a governor there. I'm the vice chair of governors now. I go in every Thursday morning, help children with their reading. And I'm so pleased it's Thursday morning because it's a full assembly, a singing assembly. And it's so lovely hearing the children sing. I do go on, don't I?
Well, that's fine. That's exactly what we want. How is being a governor different from being a teacher and a deputy head and a head teacher?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a governor, you just have certain meetings, and your overall responsibility is to make sure that the school is providing the education for the children, to make sure that they've got what things that they need. And obviously any appointments that are made, governors have to make the appointments. And you're expected as well to keep an eye on things, otherwise Ofsted will sort of be saying, you know, you're not doing your job. But teachers are doing the business and governors just make sure they are.
Which do you prefer?
It's a good question, that. While I was teaching, I preferred that, although, of course, you do in fact have a teacher governor on the governing body. But since I haven't been teaching, I do enjoy being a governor. So I think probably all the while I was able to teach, it would be the teaching. But after that, you know, I found that being a governor very satisfying.
What made you enjoy being a teacher?
I think seeing children succeed, not just in the subjects you're teaching, but obviously, you know, within a school. Excuse me a minute. Yeah, it's the satisfaction of seeing children making progress, because obviously you didn't see just in your subject area. You were sort of talking to other staff. You heard, you know, how they were going on, and to sort of see them making progress, you know, it's satisfying.
How did, when the school closed, how did that affect the local community?
I think the local community was very disappointed because, you know, a local school had been taken away. I mean, some of the children had to start going a long distance to get a school because all the nearby schools couldn't cope with it. I mean, I think initially, the school didn't have a very good name, but I think, you know, as things progressed, there were improvements, and the community in the end were very sorry that it went.
And what did you, kind of, how did you feel when you found out they were going to close the school?
Very disappointed, because I'd been working there. Well, it was only the second school I'd ever taught in. Because strangely enough, when I finished my college course, the first school where I went to teach in was the one that I'd been to as a pupil, which is quite a strange experience. And then I moved to Scott Lidgett School, and so most of my working life I'd been there. I thought that we had raised the standards from what they were, and we were now meeting all the required standards, you know, that Ofsted set. And I was just disappointed, for many aspects. I was disappointed from the children's point of view. I was disappointed because you work up a relationship with your colleagues, and all of a sudden they're being scattered here, there and everywhere. I mean, I still keep up with a number of them, but I just felt that, you know, the community were losing a good asset.
Yeah. And you said how it didn't have a very good name. How did that, when you told people you worked there, how did that make you feel? Was it, did you feel anything?
No, I don't think people sort of reacted in that sort of way. I think it was basically that the standards weren't being met. And obviously because the authority publishes all the results, so that when parents are looking for a school for their child to go to from primary school to secondary school, they obviously, you know, look at it and quite rightly base their judgments on that.
To do your job as a teacher first, what did you need to be good at? What sorts of skills?
Person skills. I think your subject is a secondary thing. I've known some absolutely brilliant people who just can't communicate with children. You know, they've probably got much better qualifications in their subjects than I would ever have got. But, I mean, a classical thing, there's one of the maths teachers there, and he just couldn't come down to their level because his maths knowledge was so good. He couldn't understand the very basics. And I think, you know, it's so important to be able to sort of see the level that children are at. And to realise that, all right, you may be brilliant at your subject, but you've got to come down to children's level, and you've got to use your skills to make it as interesting as you can, and to encourage them to improve.
And do you reckon you need the same skills to be a deputy head and a head teacher, or?
Personal skills are important. Because, I mean, you occasionally get complaints from parents about members of staff, and you've somehow got to balance it. And, I mean, there are times when parents have complained about the teacher, and I thought, yeah, I could just imagine that. And but you've still got to deal with it. Because of course you've got to be careful what you say to the teachers, because they've got unions. So you've got to get your point across, but do it in a fair sort of way.
How would you go about doing that?
It's a very good question. It probably depends on individuals. I mean, I think I had a fairly good relationship with most of the staff. I mean, there's some that you sort of met socially outside of school, and others that you only met in school, and you're glad you only met them in school. But I think respect is an important word. You've got to respect your colleagues, and I think respect is something which generally seems to be disappearing. Which is probably why I've got all the problems we have got.
You mentioned that you went up and met with some of the colleagues socially. What sorts of stuff did you do?
Oh, nothing too exciting. I mean, I seem to remember a couple of us were in the same choir, and maybe we went to the theatre or something. Maybe an occasional drink, only an occasional one.
Because with choirs, there's sometimes younger people in them as well. Is there ever anyone that you taught in the choir with you?
No, not in that choir. No. I've since leaving there, since retiring, I've been in a couple of choirs. In fact, having not been in a choir for about 50 years, I end up in two. The Southwark Council started one up, which they called Caruso. And what the whole purpose of that was to bring various nationalities of people together. And I mean, singing does bring people together. And so I started to go into that one, and that was on a Thursday evening. And they started one the South, Rotherhithe and Bermondsey Choral Society, which sounds very grand, but it's just an ordinary choir. And that one's a Tuesday. And so for quite a period of time, I was going to two choir practices a week, which is a little bit much. And I don't know, there's something about Thursday evenings that seems to be a good evening for meetings. So frequently I couldn't go to the choir. So about 6 months ago, I decided, no, I'll just go to the Tuesday evening one. But a new choir starting up, which I should probably start going to, is one for people that have had stroke, and it's going to be at Morley College of a Wednesday. So I might start going to that one. It's a Wednesday afternoon, so that's all right.
Do you think choirs bring the community together?
Oh, they do. Oh, they do. Yeah, I mean, if you looked at the choir I go to now, I mean, obviously there's a mix of ages, the mix of men and women. There's probably a social mix in there. There's a racial mix. And yet, the singing brings everybody together.
Do you think the school brought people together like that, or...?
I think so. I mean, to be a successful school, you've got to. I think the school did, because I mean, staff-wise, we had quite a range of people's backgrounds there. Yeah, I think it does.
And you mentioned unions. If you don't mind me asking, were you ever a member of a union as a teacher?
Yeah, I was a member of the NUT for a while. Didn't ever go on strike. But, I mean, I suppose it's... I'm not a big fan of unions. I think, you know, if they called a strike and I didn't believe what they were doing, I don't think I'd have gone along with it. Although I think with a union, you're supposed to do what you're told, aren't you? But I would, you know, if I believed in it, I'd go along with it. If I didn't, because I'm a Christian, I couldn't go along with something I didn't believe in.
And how did your work affect your home life?
Mostly, it didn't affect it too much. You just got used to sort of working the times. I used to take a football team on a Saturday morning, so I didn't have to do any shopping Saturday morning, because there's always sort of a football game to go to. That's probably it.
Is that a school football team?
Oh yeah.
Oh, so you were the football coach as well?
Yeah, it's because the school I first went to, which is back to my old school, Wandsworth, they played rugby, and I managed to get them to introduce football team, which I was very pleased to do. And I actually was a pupil, I played rugby for a school team, not many games. Didn't enjoy it. Football's definitely a thing for me.
You mentioned that you've had a stroke. Do you reckon that was to do with your work stress or anything like that?
No idea. No, I went to bed one night thinking it was one of my migraines, because I suffered with migraines. And next thing I knew, I woke up in hospital. And that's 3 different hospitals the best part of the year. And I don't know, I mean, I think stress can bring these things on, but I honestly don't know.
How has your work affected your health in any way?
My work or stroke or?
Yeah, working at the school, did it affect your health in any way at all?
No, I had very little time off. I'm one of these people that, you know, I've got to be really ill to take time off. Unlike some, but I think the only time I took time off was, I think I had the flu on one occasion. And, no, I didn't take much time off at all. Because I mean, the school had already packed up before I had this stroke. Because I mean, that was the beginning of the end work wise. So the stroke has affected me a lot. Probably don't want to know too much about my stroke. But, I'm lucky in many ways because it didn't affect my speech. The only time it affects it, I don't remember this, but I'm told when I was first in hospital I used to shout and swear a lot. But that's not me. But the only leftover I got from my stroke is I got fixed hips. If I was to stand up and look sideways, you would see if it's a peculiar shape. And I've got to remember to lift when I tend to drag my left foot, and I have been known to trip over and dive and climb in the floor. And in fact, the last time was a Friday, about 3 months ago. I was going around the corner to get me fish and chips. Always have fish and chips Friday evening. Crossed over the zebra crossing, turned right, a few steps, straight down, nose was bleeding. Dear lady came over and said, I'll get an ambulance. No, just somebody help me up, please. So I went round, got me fish and chips and came home. I was just glad I fell on my way there rather than on my way back with the fish and chips. But, and I find also, I mean, I think that has affected my memory as well. And I'm far more emotional now, you know. Things get me upset quicker.
Just going back to when you were off sick, did you ever receive sick pay or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, that's one thing within the teaching contract, you do get sick pay.
And then when you were a head teacher, obviously the school was closing down, but how many employees were there?
Probably about 50 initially. That includes teachers, cleaning staff and dinner ladies and all that sort of thing.
And what was it like working in a school in terms of the noise and smells and lights and like those sorts of things?
No, it's enjoyable. I mean, you just get used to it. It's all part of being there. Yeah, I mean, if I could, I'd do it all over again.
Do you think whilst you were as a teacher and then deputy head and then head teacher, do you reckon your wage was decent or?
Sorry, it was alright.
Paid a decent amount, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I was quite happy with that. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't refuse more, but I was quite happy with what I got.
What sort of things did your work make you feel in terms of contentment or stuff, anything?
Well, I think there's always when you see, well, surprise the staff as well, but us, particularly with the children, when you see them making progress, that's very rewarding. Particularly those that have had real problems, and then suddenly you can see, oh, they're making progress. And what is rewarding also, I think, to me, is when you see that the parents are working hard to help their children. Because some parents think that educating their children is just something that happens in school. They don't realise that they've got an important part to play at home. And the children that progress are the ones that the parents help. I mean, I see that now when I go to Townsend Primary School helping children their reading. The children that take their books home and their mum or dad helps them, the next time they come back, they're that much better. Whereas the ones that don't get any help, it's a struggle to make any improvement with them. I mean, parents do play a very important part in their children's education. And then some of them just think, man, the school will sort it out. But it's not like that. School plays their part, but parents have got to play their part as well.
How did it make you feel if a parent wasn't helping or playing their part?
I just felt sorry for their child. Yeah, because there's nothing you can do. I mean, the child is doing the work that he's got to do. And the parent will say, well, you know, he's done his homework, so what, sort of thing. But the children that do progress are the ones where the parents play their part. And some, I think that's a frustrating part, actually. So, you know, you'd like to really go another go at the parents, but that wouldn't do any good. Because you see children are making progress, and within the school setting, with a limited time, there's just so much you can do. But with the parents spending a bit of their time to work with their children on a one-to-one basis, can make so much difference.
And how did it make you feel when a child did well?
Oh, it's great. Well, you know, you feel so, it makes you feel happy, you know. Not in terms of taking credit for it, because I mean, mostly, I mean, the subject that I taught wasn't an important one as far as most children's future was concerned. But sort of seeing them making progress in the basic subjects, oh, it really is a lovely feeling. That's where the satisfaction of teaching comes from.
How does it make you feel, or how did it make you feel, that you were teaching a subject that you felt they didn't feel was too important the majority of them?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they're quite happy for their children to be doing something on the practical side. I suppose they thought, you know, they'd be able to do odd jobs around the home, you know. But I didn't have really thought about that one, to be quite honest. Because most of my work, although I was teaching, you know, woodwork, metalwork, most of my time and the extra money I was paid was on the social side, you know, the pastoral side.
What sorts of social stuff did you do?
No, I don't mean social in terms of having a good time.
Yeah.
But it's the liaising with parents. Making sure that, well, trying to make sure that children enjoy coming to the school, supporting the teachers when they need, you know, they're having problems. It's difficult to sort of put it all in two words, really. So my lack of ability. Was out of 10.
Because we spoke a bit about, all the way at the beginning, the wood shop and what the sorts of stuff they made in that, with the metalworking, what sorts of stuff.
Oh dear. I mean, I didn't do a lot of the metalwork, I must admit. Just trying to think what I did do, actually. Because I think I only did a year of metalwork. That was sort of very, fairly basic, like perhaps making a bracket, drilling holes in it.
If you don't mind me asking, why did you only do a year of metalwork?
Because there was people to do the metalwork, and I was doing the woodwork,
right.
Was mainly it. But obviously the more you get promotion on things like a heavy year, you've got more non-teaching time. And obviously when as deputy head, again, I wouldn't be doing as much teaching as I had at a lower level.
What made you decide to go for deputy head?
Well, I suppose having gone from housemaster or head of year, senior master, it seemed the obvious progression. Plus, you know, let's be honest, there's more money. You know. But, I suppose as senior master, I'd enjoyed the work doing for there. I'd enjoyed sort of trying to help both staff and pupils. Deputy head seemed to be the next sort of obvious progression.
What made you go for head of year then? Was that the step it went, teacher and then head of year?
Yeah, well, I mean, I first went there. I went there as a housemaster. And they decided to do away the house system, so it's head of year. It's just basically a way to, within education, to get promotion. And I quite like the sort of pastoral side of it, you know, where you're not just looking at any particular subject, but sort of making sure that a child is learning, is enjoying their learning as far as possible. And obviously a certain aspect of it is the discipline side as well. You know, if their children are misbehaving, they get referred to you, and you have to wave a magic wand and make them better. But I've never really stopped to think why I did it, actually. That's a good question.
Are there any specific cases where you helped or had to discipline a child that kind of stick with you, that make you feel?
No, I can't offhand think of any individual one that sticks in my mind. No.
Okay. Another question that I've forgotten it, so I'm sorry about that.
That's quite alright.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did the school benefit the community? Was it, instead of not just educating the community, but was it a focal kind of meeting place? Or?
Well, yes, it was also used for adult education, evening classes. So it was a good resource there. I mean, it had a good gym, so that was sort of popular for sports groups to use it. I'm just trying to think what groups did use it. Obviously, there was an art group, so they had a good art facilities there. And so, sort of, people of all ages who fancy themselves as artists could come along and have a go. I'm not an artist, I can just about draw a circle and a square, and that's about it, you know. But friends in that picture there.
Just get a good seat because
yeah.
I can't see it.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Now she's a lady who's had a stroke and spends her life in a wheelchair.
That's impressive.
Yeah, she does lovely. I've got one upstairs as well. She does lovely pictures. So, and she's a lovely lady with it, you know. She's managed to bring up a couple of children. And she's such a positive lady, even though she spends her life in a wheelchair.
Are there any kids that you remember from when you were working at school?
No, as I said, since my stroke, I'm afraid my memory is... Well, my diary is my memory. One thing on my stroke, I didn't know about this till afterwards, but while I was in hospital, my wife was twice asked to sign a do not resuscitate, which she didn't. If she had done, we wouldn't be talking now. So I'm just pleased that she decided she wanted me around for a bit longer.